This is the International Education Marketing Podcast, a roundup of news stories and how they might impact marketing and recruiting for the international education sector.
Welcome to episode 86 of the International Education Marketing Podcast. I'm your moderator, Daniel Chatham, and today our contributors are
Tyson,
Andy,
and I'm Matilda Fritz.
Thank you all for being here. I'm looking forward to hearing what you've brought to share in and to our conversation. Tyson, why don't you start us off?
Hi, Daniel. Thank you for having us here today. So my article is about Indian students fueling international enrollment at American colleges. And this article really goes to say how for the third straight year, the amount of students from India are increasing while the number of students from China are falling. So the article goes to talk about how schools are shifting strategies and trying to put more of their efforts into India instead of China. And I have to agree, while India has become a stronger market, I think that we really have to not put all of our eggs in one basket, as has been the case with China, how a lot of schools have just, and in these previous podcasts as well, people have talked about that schools are putting everything in China, but because of the pandemic and post-pandemic and the ability for the Chinese population to leave and come to America has been really difficult. So I think that, you know, it's really important to spread our options and use our time to really figure out what works best and not only say, oh, India is increasing, so let's put all of our funding and marketing strategies into India. And also, I thought this article had an interesting point where the US also is trying to use soft power, and because of India in the region, they're trying to reduce China's, how can I say, their power and reduce Chinese influence in the market. So I thought that was also a really interesting point.
Thanks, Tyson. It definitely resonates with me that the idea of not putting all your marketing eggs in one basket. There are a lot of examples of schools that have over-relied on certain countries as a source of international students. And it doesn't even end there. I mean, there are schools that overdo the recruiting through partnerships or pipelines and neglect to recruit in other ways. So this is a really important point, and I hope that we'll get a chance to unpack it more on the other side. Andy, what did you bring in this week?
Yeah, and thanks again for having us. So my article spoke to how there are a significant drop in U.S. college students who are studying a foreign language. And the article specifically conflates that with how that connects with an issue in national security for the U.S. But I would argue that there are issues within marketing foreign language learning to students, as well as other benefits that we can get from learning a foreign language that the article doesn't touch on. And so it's a pretty significant drop from 2009, where it peaked at 1.7 million students at the college level enrolled in languages other than English. By 2021, enrollment has dropped nearly 30%. And I know there are a lot of universities who, if they have cuts in funding, one of the first thing that are cut are language courses. So that are the dynamics my article spoke to today.
That is very interesting. And 2009 is a peculiar time. 2008, we had a major financial crisis, and it just makes me wonder if this was a reaction that stuck and has outlasted whatever justification that might have been perceived to be there during the financial crisis of 2008. Very, very interesting and dramatic drop in such a short period of time. Matilda, let's hear about your article.
Okay. Thank you for having us on. I recently read an article that is very similar to what Andy described in her article. I actually read a think piece by one Ingrid Piller, who's a professor of applied linguistics at, I think, Macquarie University, if I'm saying that correctly. And they discuss the effects of AI and technological development and how that is directly affecting enrollment in language courses and what that means for translation. So the essential argument of her article is that as technology develops and as machine learning gets more advanced, people are relying on it a lot more for their translation needs. But Pillar argues that it's not actually the most effective way of translating various languages, because for as powerful as a tool as ChatGPT is, it doesn't have the ability to understand the nuance of a language or the social cultural context of a language. And so it may not be the most effective means for language translation. Despite that, there has been, as Andy mentioned, a significant drop in foreign language enrollment. And also technology has pretty widely been used as a rationale for dismantling different foreign language programs at institutions. And I think what this is pointing to is a pretty significant shift in values and how people value the skills or abilities to speak a foreign language or the ability to study and translate a language. And so moving forward, as these machines become more powerful, there's going to be maybe more aggressive marketing on behalf of educational programs, not just to assert the value of their programs to students, but also to maybe stakeholders or people allocating funding to these programs. And I think when we assert value propositions in the future, there will need to be kind of a, whether it's in the subtext or said directly, an assertion of why human-centered translation is necessary in a way that's directly like perpendicular to AI and technological developments, in a way that centers like human-centered translation is at the center of the work that we do.
Great, thank you. Yeah, these are really interesting articles. Each one of them is worthy of a deep dive. I'm wondering, as you've heard the debriefs from each other, what kind of themes emerge, or do you see any connectivity between these? They're obviously different enough that we could isolate them and talk about them separately. Where do you want to go with these three articles?
So I guess tying it all together, it's always been that picture of us as Americans, we don't need to study the foreign language because everyone else is going to study English for us. So it's really interesting to see that, whereas students from India, where they still use English as a language there, they're still willing and wanting to come to America to also not necessarily improve their English, but working in a society that they see as more developed or highly commercialized, or where they can make a better living on their own. Whereas Americans, because maybe, like you said, Daniel, because of the financial crisis, or what Andy brought up as well, maybe it's just, you know, not going back to what it was because we don't want to leave or need to leave America in order for us to quote unquote succeed.
I think you're making a really good point, Tyson. And also to tie that back into what Matilda was saying about just having values at the center of this conversation as well. So my article, again, it tied the drop in U.S. College student language, foreign language learning to national security in the U.S. And I wanted to point out a quote in the article that says, quote, a year after 9/11, college level enrollments in Arabic almost doubled to over 10,500, and they peaked in 2009 at just under 3,500, end quote. And so I wanted to point that out because I read that, and the first thing my mind went to is, okay, students are obviously seeing some kind of value in learning this language now, and if that be economic in their career in the future, or, you know, whatever else their value might be, or the reason that they're drawn to this language now, there's something there that changed, right, after 9/11. And I want to make sure that when we're promoting language learning at whatever level of education, because I do think it's important for Americans to, like Tyson was saying, step outside of the vision of, oh, well, we speak English. Wherever I go in the world, they're going to speak English as well. It's important for us in a cultural, and just language learning helps our brain in so many different ways. I think there's a lot of good reasons to learn a foreign language, but going back to that quote and the values that are driving the reason of our language learning, I want to make sure that we're careful not to market language learning with any messages of hate or distrust. I could see there being some marketing after 9/11 of Islamophobia, which is also now on the rise again in the US, and other sorts of hate of like, well, we have to learn these languages so that we can understand what everyone's saying and undermine any intelligence, kind of that military intelligence in that kind of way. It's important, I guess, overall to be thinking about those things, but I don't want us to kind of message any values of mistrust or distrust or hate within our marketing of language learning in the US. So
how do you see these articles affecting the overall marketing strategy of a school? If, for example, Andy, your recommendation is to not market a certain way, if fewer people are studying foreign languages, and there's also the potential impact for that to have on national security, then how would you roll that into a proactive marketing strategy?
That's a very good question. And so another point in the article does say that while other languages were dropping in percentage of people who were in the US were learning those languages, such as French, German, Japanese, Spanish, they found that there was an increase of 128% of US college students that were learning Korean. And so the article connects that to the global fascination with Korean pop culture. I think that's the way I would like to market this and the way I would like to have an in of foreign language learning in the US. You have to find what that foreign language acquisition means to students, not just, oh, you should learn a language and students aren't seeing any connection to their lives or the reason why. I think we need to market the reason why as, you know, cross-cultural communication, finding something like K-pop, finding some point in a culture that could literally be the smallest thing that's the in for a student that then prompts them and makes them want to learn the second language because they want to know more about this part of the culture. And to do that, one avenue is through foreign language learning. So I think we can market this in a way that is very, you know, citizen diplomacy. Maybe some people feel a little uneasy with that word as well, but just kind of making sure we're opening the avenues of cross-cultural communication, because when you're learning a foreign language, you are really learning another culture. And I think if we do that at a great enough scale, you really are going to be touching that national security component that the article is speaking to as well, not just in a way that is intercepting military intelligence from a foreign entity.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Andy. So Matilda, I'm thinking about your article with the technology piece making language learning, or the implication that it makes language learning redundant. What are your thoughts about whether a school should lean into and embrace the technology, or whether it needs to change its value proposition to argue, and I think you started to make this argument actually, that the human translation is more important or better in a qualitative way. So when you're talking about an educational institution that is offering translation and interpretation programs, what kind of an impact might this item have on them? And where do you think it should go?
I do think that programs will need to integrate the use of AI and the use of technology into whatever program they're administering, whether that's translation or some other context. I think that's broadly the direction we're headed in as like these tools become more powerful. I do think that as well, one of the things the article talks about is the ability to discern between high context and high stakes and low stakes situations. So high stakes being something like medical treatment. And if you can use just an app to facilitate that interpretation experience, that would be a high stakes situation, which has like led to some significant problems in the past. And then low stakes being something like asking for directions on the street. So I think when I mentioned the value proposition of different programs earlier, I think that there needs to be some kind of medium in the marketing where we're integrating technology potentially into more low stakes contexts, but we're giving maybe the students of a program the tools to navigate high context or high stakes contexts effectively, and why that work is important, and asserting that in maybe the value proposition.
So zooming back out to all of these articles, on the one hand, they are each, as I said earlier, worthy of independent digestion, but they all sort of come together for me a little bit. The trend of sources of international students varies in response to economic and political climates, and to some extent, technologies can exacerbate those trends. And here we have a domestic issue with U.S. students studying foreign languages less, again, a political issue, as mentioned by Andy in the example of Arabic language, an economic issue, I would say, based on the timing of this 2009 to today trend, and then technologies coming into it. In any of these areas, I think we could probably advise a school to either lean into the technology and embrace it, make that part of the learning, and therefore part of the marketing strategy. We could say to a school, embrace the international students from India, but beware of overdoing it. Still, you have to cultivate relationships in other areas and be balanced. And then also from the US side of things, this one seems to be a little bit harder to deal with, but we could certainly spend more time focusing on the fewer students who are studying foreign languages. And so from our marketing strategy standpoint, doubling down and being more focused on our feeder institutions, building deeper relationships with people who are in the language space. There are fewer of them, so theoretically, they can get more of your time and attention. In practice, it's not quite that simple, but that would be a good way of sort of responding to these things, is to really make sure that the people that are studying these languages feel welcomed and invited, and that there is a good fit for your program in languages, if that's what you're marketing for. Let me ask you, what other thoughts do you have on these articles, either individually or more collectively?
I think with the coming of technology, we all have to be responsible in how we use this technology, whether it be for better or for worse. Recently in the news, Sam Altman was removed and then reinstated quite recently into using OpenAI. So I think it's learning how to use the technology to market, of course, to international students and trying to bring them in, and maybe using sources and resources that aren't going to cost as much, such as going over there or hiring agents living in those countries, but also working on the American domestic side and getting students interested, like Andy was saying, in languages, and finding that little bit that's going to spark the interest and say, oh, I want to study that. I want to sing a song like BTS or something along those lines. But I think it's really important to remember, at the end of the day, it's also the student is at the center of it all. And we should really be thinking about how to get the student excited and prepared to either come to America, study a foreign language, or go abroad.
I think you're making a good point, Tyson. That's what was in my mind as well, is first just making sure we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket. I think that is a central point of all of our articles. There's no easy one quick solution. If different markets change quickly, you can't shift these things really quickly that we're talking about. So making sure we don't put all of our eggs in one basket, I think, is important for all three cases. And then, like you're saying, just never losing sight that there's people at the center of all of this, right? You're marketing to people for their benefit, and hopefully we can find some kind of symbiotic relationship amongst this all, because it is always people at the center of these issues.
All right. Well, thank you all very much for being here and for contributing to this episode. I greatly appreciate it. I've enjoyed the conversation immensely and look forward to digging into some of these articles after we wrap.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you're interested in learning more about international management as a graduate degree, please visit us at go.miis.edu/IEM. That's go.miis.edu/IEM.